kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Recording starting.
No, you can't jump on my lap right now, cat.
Dickhead cats. All right.
Meow. 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 Meow.
Meow.
Meow.
Meow.
Meow.
Meow.
Now, I'm not high right now.
I'm very heavily medicated, so me doing an interview probably wouldn't have been a good idea today.
Hey, whatever works, right?
I've had so many drugs.
And later tonight, I'm going to have so many drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of drugs.
And that is the plus side to having a horrible disease that's incurable, is they're just like, here, take all the medicines.
My drugs right now, migraine relief. Fuck yeah.
And then it's always fun.
We got some muscle relaxers for my back.
And I'm not even allowed to have those.
Got some Luden's cough drops for my sore throat.
Cough drops are life.
Yeah, I got all the hard shit tonight. On that note, might as well start this. So what's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole Martin. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm alive. I mean,
good first step, I guess.
Yeah, I'm in an RA flare, so it is what it is. I didn't want to move my fingers or anything today anyway. It's cool. In Zootopia, the sloth at the DMV flash, that's me. That's my day. I've just been like moving slowly for everything, and I'm so aggravated at myself. D can see I'm getting aggravated at the shit I'm trying to do, and then he just tries to swoop in, and then I get more pissed. Like, I can do it myself. It'll just take me 4 years.
Get the fuck away from me. Terrible. Let me do this. I'm a grown woman. I do what I want. You don't know me.
Independent woman.
You're not my real father. Oh, man.
I was adopted.
God. Oh, Lord. Oh, man. Anyway, we were supposed to have a guest joining us this episode, but sickness is hitting everyone hard, so it is just us tonight. Carnage is in the chat. Should we get him on?
Oh, my God.
Nah.
This will instantly become a seven-hour show.
Yeah, we'll just go with us, because there is a lot of news to tackle this week. A lot of big stuff happened. First off, Games with Gold for April have been announced. And holy shit, Microsoft sure knows how to quell the bitching of everyone saying Games with Gold sucks now because of Game Pass.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Xbox 360, yeah. April 1st through the 15th, Cars 2, cool game, easy achievements, everyone's gonna 1,000 that one.
Mm-hmm. My kids are excited for that one.
It's a fun game. I legitimately enjoyed it when I red boxed it for a night. And that's how quick it took to 1,000 it as well. One night. Done. Complete. April 16th through the 30th, Dead Space 2. So there's another big one.
Yes. Which is exciting because I have Dead Space 1 because it was Games with Gold. And I was like, well, I don't want to play it if I don't think I'm ever going to get around to 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Now I have more incentive to go back and play 1.
Oh, man. So. Yeah. But Dead Space, I think that's a really good addition. And then that's just the 360 stuff. The Xbox One stuff is where things get a little bit bananas. The entire month of April, The Witness.
I'm excited about this. Also, I'm glad I didn't buy it when it was on sale. Because I have a really bad habit that I buy shit and then it's Games with Gold 2 months later, which is also why I still haven't played Ori yet.
Oh, God.
Because I just know. But I'm glad to see The Witness.
Yeah, a lot of people are pretty excited for that one. The fact that it's a $40 game helps as well.
Yeah.
And then,
speaking of expensive games.
Yeah, April 16th through May 15th, Assassin's Creed Syndicate. So the good one that's not Origins.
Mm-hmm. So good. Syndicate, and I need to go back and finish it. It's one of the few that I haven't played. all the way through. The other one would be Black Flag and Rogue. I started Rogue, but I never finished it.
Did you pick but up Syndicate, Rogue Remastered?
No, I want to. I don't want to pay that price for it. And I'm hoping it'll be Games with Gold in 2 years.
The way things have been going with Assassin's Creed games being part of Games with Gold, I wouldn't be shocked if it is eventually.
See, I already owned Syndicate too, and I told David, I was like, it fucking figures that we actually bought and paid for Syndicate, and now it's Games with Gold. And this is why I don't have Origins yet. I'll just wait 3 years. It's okay. I got a hell of a backlog anyway. I'm not in any hurry.
Yeah, Xylo in the chat saying it could have been worse, could have been Unity. Oh, man.
See, now, Unity got a lot of flack, but I actually liked it story-wise.
But gameplay-wise, when that launched, it was so broken and buggy. And
I think I've still got screenshots of, like, where one of the peasants was stuck sitting in a tree, and it looked like the tree was growing up their ass. It was really funny. But I did like the game. The only thing that kind of aggravated me particularly with Unity was the multiplayer was everybody was the same dude, just different.
Oh, God.
And I was just like, why? Because I was so excited for co-op in Assassin's Creed. I like dragging my friends along with me through shit. Whether they enjoy it or not doesn't matter. I'm dragging them through.
I didn't really get to play too much of the multiplayer for it because everyone seemed to just run away from that game as quick as possible.
I drug some motherfuckers through it. I really did. And I finished it. Actually, I should have had the completion, but one of the last achievements in Dead Kings, the DLC that was free, it glitched. Surprisingly. Nobody ever saw a glitch achievement in Unity.
Never.
But
that is shocking.
It
glitched
and it just never popped. I could probably install the game and load up my save and it might pop now.
It might. Hey, you might as well. If it's a free achievement, it's a free achievement.
But, yeah. That's
a hell of a month of Games with Gold, though.
But Syndicate is definitely... Syndicate was worth the money. And oh, it's rare for me to say a $60 game is worth the money. But I thought Syndicate was worth it. And if anybody follows me on Twitter, they're well aware that number one dressed as Evie Fry last year for Halloween. And she does some pretty hardcore Evie Fry cosplay.
Hopefully people will finally give Syndicate the chance it deserves because it was a really, really solid game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just after Unity, no one trusted them to play an Assassin's Creed game again.
Yeah, it took until Origins, and even still, people were a little questionable over Origins. No. I say that I could probably wait, but I have a feeling that if it was on sale enough, D would be like, okay, we're buying that now.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but incredible things about Origins, so I need to dive into that one soon. And again, yeah. I'm still waiting for my Far Cry 5 to show up. Oh my God, I'm frustrated with that one.
Oh no.
Okay, we're gonna jump into the news here, take a little break from it, so I could tell my wonderful story of Far Cry 5. Months upon months upon months ago, I pre-ordered it through Game UK, because they were offering the Father Edition of the game that had a really, really fucking cool blue steelbook with it. I'm like, well, they don't have the Father Edition in America, they were only doing some one that had, like, friggin' deer antlers with it. Like, that's an awful collector edition. Let me get the one from the UK. So I order the one from the UK. On Friday, I get an email. Your order has been shipped. It's going out now. Yay, you've been charged and everything else. A few hours later, I get another email. Oh, we're not shipping your order.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The reason why, because of the weight of it, yet they took my money months prior to make the order. So, lucky for me, I didn't have a way to get that. Ubisoft American store, I guess they decided to carry the Father Edition because no one wants deer antlers. So, I was able to place an order there. Unfortunately, it doesn't come with the blue steel book that everywhere in the rest of the fucking world gets. Dogs. The American one, it just comes with the gold edition of the game that has its own separate steelbook. And I mean, it's cool looking, but I really wanted the blue one. and it still didn't show up because they, you know, shipping.
The heart wants what the heart wants, Joe.
Yeah. Ooh, I'm starting to get an echo. You might want to lower the volume on your headset a bit.
God damn it.
It's the dog's fault.
It
doesn't
lower. It really is.
We got to get you a headset one of these days.
I know. I've looked at mics, too. An actual mic.
Yeah. Made CJ get one. You're next.
It's a plan, but shit keeps happening because that's life.
No, but I was so bummed about Far Cry. They didn't even ship it until Wednesday. Like, you know, you're spending $160 on a collector's edition. At least ship it on Monday.
I imagine it wasn't
Tuesday.
Cheap to ship it overseas either.
Well, no, I didn't get the UK one. I got it from America.
Oh, the American one didn't ship until.
Yeah.
Damn. You're having all kinds of bad luck.
Yeah, I'm going to assume it's because I didn't get to place my order with them until Friday. So, yeah. You know, Monday rolls around, Tuesday rolls around, and they're handling orders that have been placed months ago, like mine would have been if I knew that they were going to carry the Father's Edition. The worst part is I ended up paying more to get it from Ubisoft America.
Damn.
Yeah, it was like $30 more after shipping and tax and... God damn it, game. And I just wanted the blue steelbook, and I'm not getting the fucking steelbook. Anyway, Games with Gold for April is awesome. PlayStation Plus isn't just rolling over and taking it either. They have a fairly solid lineup. Their April lineup on PlayStation 3 is, you could tell that they're running out of steam on PS3 with In Space We Brawl and Toy Home.
What?
I don't even fucking know.
Meanwhile,
on the PlayStation Vita, they have 99 Vitas, which we just recently came out on Xbox One. That was a pretty cool brawler beat 'em up. And then Qbert Rebooted, which is also cross-buy on PS3 and PS4. So that's a fairly solid two-pack of games. And then PS4 has Trackmania Turbo and Mad Max.
Okay. Not bad.
So, overall, a solid month. Good headliners, but Xbox easily wins this one. Last month, it was all PlayStation. This month, it is Xbox.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but overall, good stuff. If you have Plus or Gold, you're getting some good shit this month. Or next month, whatever it is. Let's see. Game Pass additions. Last week we talked about the games that were leaving Game Pass. This week we finally get to talk about the games that are joining Game Pass in April. Xbox 360, only one game, Sacred Citadel, which, you know, whatever. And then Xbox One, we already knew about City Skylines, but there's another, you know, a nice chunk of games joining with Cluster Truck, Kingdom New Lands, Late Shift, Portal Knights, one of your favorites, The Hunter Call of the Wild.
I'm very excited about that.
And then another new release. We had Sea of Thieves this month. Next month, we're getting RoboCraft Infinity launching straight to Game Pass.
That's interesting that a game is launching straight to Game Pass that's not a Microsoft title.
Yeah, it's. I'm not going to complain, though.
No, I think it's great, especially when it's... When it's smaller games that have a multiplayer but don't have a steady install base, I think it's a good option. It puts your game out in front of people immediately, and they're going to be with their friends and be like, you know what, this is on Game Pass, let's try it.
Yeah.
So it's really not a bad idea. I think that's one of the things that both worked in Sea of Thieves' favor and hurt it at the same time, though, unfortunately, because they weren't expecting that kind of... wash of players, even with all of the betas and stuff. I don't think they were expecting that many Game Pass players to take it on. And but for small indie games, The Hunter has multiplayer. Most people are surprised to hear a hunting game has multiplayer, but it does. And
you've raved about that game too.
I have, and I've been hollering up a storm trying to convince, you know, my best friend to buy it. And he's not sold on it, but he's got Game Pass.
Well, next month, we're going to be playing together.
And I'm going to drag his ass into that multiplayer and be like, come on, let's go. We got to go kill some deer, take down some elk. And I'm really looking forward to diving back into it and finally getting to drag my friend through it.
Jesus Ninja asking, isn't that hunting game open world? That's the open world one, right?
It is, yeah. It is open world, and there's two maps. One in the U.S. and one in Germany.
Nice.
So, and there's tons. You, everything from foxes and coyotes to giant Roosevelt elk. So, it's ridiculous. Bears.
Look at you dropping, like, official names and everything. Roosevelt elk. I would have just been like, it's one of the deer, but not the deer. It's got the bigger things. Because I'm technical. That's my redneck like that. Side. I'm technical like that with the things, the big things.
I'm really, like, I know I enjoy hunting games small scale, but I didn't expect to enjoy the hunter as much as I did. I figured it was going to be like, okay, well, I'm going to load it up, figure out the controls, see if I can break it in any kind of way, and then let David tell me the mechanics of it. But I picked it up really quickly, and I just enjoyed it. And if I'm not mistaken, it might be Xbox X enhanced.
I'm not sure. I believe it is, yeah.
Yeah, I believe it's 4K. Even without 4K, I was just playing on my original Xbox. I haven't played it on the S yet.
Get but, them 4K pew-pews.
Yeah, it was fucking gorgeous. Like, I was so mad because I was embargoed and there were just all these beautiful scenes. And I'm like, I can't take a picture of any of this.
That is the worst. When the worst with embargoes is when you run into a really, really good game that you just want to talk about. Oh my God, mm-hmm. This game is fucking awesome. You need to get it.
Clips. And you want to, when you do something really cool, you just like, oh, Xbox recording. And then you just have to let the moment slide by.
I got one of those, a really, really awesome game that I'm not allowed to talk about for another week and a half. Ugh. So it's just going to like eat at my soul. That's like, I want to talk about this game and I'm not allowed. I've been so excited for it, and now it's here, and I'm playing it, and it's really good, and I can't talk about it.
I think the last one I struggled on the embargo with was The Story Goes On, because I really wanted to tell everybody, don't be put off by how it looks or how it, you know, it plays really well. It's a lot of fun. You're going to like it. And I couldn't say shit. Then people would be like, oh, you're playing a lot of Story. Yeah. And people were like, oh, you're playing a lot of Story Goes On. I'm like, yeah, but if I tell you anything, I have to kill you.
I will cut a bitch if you get me to talk.
If you make me break embargo. Oh, my stars.
I will cut a bitch. Oh, man. Let's see. What other news was there this week? Only one backward compatible game was added to the Xbox backward compatibility lineup this week. Nothing last week, so it's good to finally have another game. And it's a big one. I'm guessing you've heard.
Uh-huh.
Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare.
Yes.
Seems like a lot of people are pretty excited about this one. People who didn't want to drop the money on Activision's money grab remake or remaster, now they don't have to. They could just pop in their old disc and everything works, and yay.
Pretty excited about that. And then, because I'm a Call of Duty nerd. But well, I don't like to like fly it out like a flag because people make fun of me for it, but so I'm trying to be low-key about my excitement.
Did you play the remaster of it?
I did not. I wanted it, but at first it was only bundled with Infinite Warfare. And Infinite Warfare is the first time since Modern Warfare 2 that I've seen a Call of Duty and just gone, I can't bring myself to play that.
Wow.
I just couldn't do it. And even with Modern Warfare bundled with it, I was just like, nope. And then it came out with a $40 price tag standalone, and I'm just like, that is an awful lot to pay for a game that's sitting on my shelf.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
That is a lot. I know a lot of people wanted it, and then, you know, they released it by itself, and I think it was just too little too late with that. A lot of people were pissed.
They went in and added microtransactions and loot boxes to the multiplayer, and you're just like, what?
You know, clearly what we all needed.
Yeah, I don't think that's what the game was missing. So funny thing is that I never played the first Modern Warfare. I played 2. That's when my Call of Duty, you know, nerddom began. I watched my husband play a lot of the first Modern Warfare. But at the time, I was playing Halo, and I had it in my head that Call of Duty was too complicated, and I couldn't learn to play it.
Really?
Boy, do I feel dumb now when I say shit like that. But at the time, I was genuinely convinced. Like, I would watch him play, and one of the biggest things that threw me off was, like, the weapon names being combinations of letters and numbers. And I was just like, I don't think I could learn the differences. I really don't. And now I ramble off nonsense about the differences between M4s and M16s like it's my life.
Yeah, I don't know the difference at all.
At the time, I was just genuinely convinced that I couldn't do it. I played Halo because I had an assault rifle and a battle rifle and a pistol, and that was it. And I knew what to do with them.
Xylo, saying 7-year-olds play Call of Duty, it's too complicated for you.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, it wasn't a logical thing. It's just that it's what I convinced myself was the case, that I just couldn't do it. And
I've just never been big on the series at all. But, you know, even people who hate Call of Duty can still admit that Modern Warfare is really fucking good.
It was good. It was. I still remember quotes from Modern Warfare 2.
I went to GameStop today and picked it up. It was only $5. So, hashtag you left. Yeah, I'm amazed. I just checked the price now. It's Thursday night, and the price still hasn't gone up.
Wow, that's impressive, especially considering, you know, being that it's Modern Warfare, and it was one of the more popular ones, I would have thought it would still at least be in the 15 to 20 range.
I was expecting 25 by the end of the day, but who knows? Yeah. Maybe it'll be tomorrow that they jack the price up. I'm sure it'll happen eventually. Some game announcements, some games showing up on Xbox in the coming months that some people never thought would show up. The first one, Hellblade is coming over. Mm-hmm. Senua's Sacrifice. That is exciting to see.
I've been really hopeful that that would come to Xbox. I didn't see anything specifically saying it was PlayStation forever. Yeah. So I've just been sitting there with fingers crossed, like, I want that to come to Xbox, and here we are.
I kind of figured that would be an eventuality just because it was self-published by Ninja Theory, yeah. And I'm assuming it was, like, probably a 6-month exclusive or something.
Yeah, I think in some cases, if you've got a small or an indie studio that are developing, and they're, especially if they're self-publishing, they choose a platform they think it will do best on, and go for that first.
Yeah.
And then once they get the money from that, then they go for the other platforms.
Yeah.
So that tends to be the path that they take.
But I'm happy it's showing up. Like, it's gotten so much praise. I know Tim Ekibis talked about it. We didn't get to review it the first time around. Fingers crossed we'll get it this time, but, you know, we'll see. If it shows up, awesome. If not, totally understand. We're a stupid, shitty, little nothing show. But that's not the only game that shocked a bunch of people. Today is Thursday that we're recording this, and it was announced this morning, No Man's Sky is coming to Xbox One.
No Man's Sky. I have to be really honest. I gave this game so much flack when it was released, just based on what I had seen from screenshots and stuff where everything was not up to snuff.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I gave it flack, I was very honest. I was like, if it ever came to Xbox, I'd still totally try it. Just because that's what I do, is I have a penchant for trying out really bad games. And I like them a lot of times. I don't know why. I'm the same way with movies. I love horror movies. Give me the worst B-rated horror movie you can find. And I'm like, yes. Fuck, I dropped my pen. And I'm like, yes, this is the best thing ever. So I do the same thing with games. And I was like, so if you're telling me it's bad, I want to try it.
Yeah, the thing is, it was never a bad game. It was just not what anyone was expecting, because Sean Murray...
In a way, that does make it bad. If it's like, we promised all this shit, and then it's not here, or it's completely different, then it's bad, because it's not what you were told you were buying into.
I mean, I don't know. It wasn't a bad game. Like, it was well put together. It wasn't what we were sold, which sucks. There was so much just outright false advertising and outright lies with the game
that
it ruined its reputation. And that's part of the reason I thought we would never see this come to Xbox, just because of Hello Games and their reputation being torpedoed by No Man's Sky.
But yeah. Even the devs went like radio silent on Twitter for months on end.
Yeah. And from what I hear over the past, 2 years since it's been out, year and a half, 2 years, the game has turned around a lot. It's a lot of the stuff that they talked about is there. Not everything, obviously. But if the game released like this, people wouldn't have been as pissed as they were. And
right.
Who knows? Maybe when it launches on Xbox, people will be like, you know what? This isn't as bad as we thought it was going to be. And maybe it'll get a second life. Who knows?
So it's worth noting, too, that the multi-platform release of it is actually going to have another update, even from where it's at now.
Yeah.
So it will have even more content. And again, they're promising at least the starting foundation for multiplayer. I don't know. You know, I'm not going to put all my eggs in that basket.
Yeah.
But I do hope they've learned their lesson from the first run through.
Me too.
And I hope that they've made like positive changes. I have read that the updates that have been done have added a lot and been good. So if there's nowhere, I feel like there's nowhere else for it to go but up.
Yeah.
And we're kind of at a point where we're like, look, if you guys just try even a tiny bit, we're going to give you a couple bonus points.
Yeah.
Just do something.
I'm excited that it's finally showing up. I'm going to give it a second chance. I bought it on PS4 when it launched. Shocker, I bought the collector's edition.
No kid.
So, you know, it was a nice little package. It had a cool steel book with it. I ended up selling it to my buddy George, the guy who does the "Hey kids" at the beginning.
I wonder if they'll do all of the collector's edition and stuff all over again for the new release.
I don't know. That would be neat if they do, but part of me thinks they might just go digital only on this. I don't know.
Well, no, there was a picture with retail cases.
Oh, was there?
For it. Yeah, there was a picture of retail cases, and they've changed the name to No Man's Sky Next.
Yeah, I saw about the next thing. Dark Naked, does George hate you now? Because if he does, you deserve it. He wanted it. He wanted it. So that's all on him.
I lost my train of thought.
Yeah, the No Man's Sky Next. I saw the whole No Man's Sky Next thing. I didn't know if that was going to be the official name of it, which I guess it is.
Yeah, I mean, it was. The other thing, was it when it released on PlayStation and PC the first time, was it self-published?
No, I'm pretty sure Sony published it.
Okay, now it's 505 Games.
Mm.
505 Games is responsible for publishing this run.
Makes sense. So,
yeah, they've taken over on that aspect of it. And that may help. 505, they do some pretty good shit. So maybe they're going to breathe down Hello Games' throats enough that, you know, the updates are worth their while. And clearly they saw something in it if they want to throw their name behind it.
I don't want them to put their 2 cents in that much, because I'm pretty sure Sony is what caused No Man's Sky to turn out as underwhelming as it did. I think Sony made them overpromise, and then they just didn't give them enough time to do what they needed to do. I think Sony themselves got caught up in the hype of the game.
Yeah. That's from what I know of the launch and the whole lead up to the launch. That's pretty much what I always gather from it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. 505, most of the shit that they've put out, when you see their name, you kind of associate it with decent games and good quality. So
yeah.
I don't know. They clearly feel confident enough to put their name on what's coming out with No Man's Sky Next.
So yeah, Dark Meek is saying I don't think Sony did that. I think the main guy said shit he wasn't supposed to. I think it was a mix. I think everyone bought into their own hype. I think Sony pushed them to try adding all these features that just never made it, because Sony put a lot of money into that game.
Yeah, they did.
And I think Sony took a big loss on that game. That's my guess. But clearly, I don't know anything. But from one No Man's Sky to what people are calling the No Man's Sky of Xbox, Sea of Thieves has had over 2 million players in the first week.
That's impressive.
That is. 2 million players in a week.
Yeah, I'm certain Game Pass played a huge aspect, you know, a big role in that aspect. So,
but what do you think of people saying that Sea of Thieves is just as bad as No Man's Sky? Because I think that pisses me off mainly because Sea of Thieves was very upfront about what it was. It had betas. Everyone knew what it was going to be. They didn't lie about, there's going to be this feature in the game that's just not there. Everyone knew what it was going to be.
If Rare had said Sea of Thieves is going to have multiplayer and then launched the game and you were on a boat by yourself and you never saw anybody else, I would get the comparison. Mm-hmm. But I think people are just being overdramatic. I think they hype themselves up. This happens so much with Xbox games. It happened with Quantum Break too, and ReCore. When there's a new Xbox IP, they want to hype themselves up so much by the 2 million, by the way, you mentioned with unique players.
Yes.
That didn't include Game Pass, I think. Or it was the sales number doesn't include Game Pass.
Whatever. I don't remember what the sales number, I think the sales were over 1 million.
Yeah.
That didn't include Game Pass, but the unique players, that was just total unique players. That includes everything.
But we, like I said, we saw it with Quantum Break and we saw it with ReCore. Whenever there's a new IP, the speculation, you know, and the rumor mills just, they absolutely get out of control. It was like, before Sea of Thieves even launched, I saw dozens of videos. And people hollering on my timeline, well, they're probably just going to put in microtransactions and loot boxes, and it's just going to go to hell anyway. Like, they were already prepared to be pissed before the game even saw the light of day. And I don't understand. The same people will bitch and complain about media, which includes us. We're technically media. And, you know, but we technically, for all intents and purposes, you know, but they bitch that, oh, you know, they're biased against Xbox. But then the next breath, they sit there and go, well, they're going to fuck it up this way, or they're going to do this, or this is not going to be there. Like, what do you want?
I think people are just too ready to write off everything that Microsoft does anymore. It doesn't matter if it's good. It doesn't matter if it's bad. Everybody just has this preconceived notion before that it's going to suck. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah, yeah. And Mika said ReCore was awesome. ReCore was awesome. I don't understand the complaints about ReCore. My only complaint was that it was really far to get between, you know, one place and another, and I get lost in all the desert. But apparently, I haven't played since the tank update. But that would probably fix whatever I was bitching about. I think I beat it anyway, and so that's the reason I haven't gone back. But, you know, it's just, everybody gets so built up on what they think is or isn't going to happen to a game, and then they lock themselves in the echo chamber that is Twitter, which is really just the worst fucking place to be. And they don't want to hear anything that violates that, you know, that rumor mill that they've set themselves up in.
No.
And then as soon as the game drops, the first thing they start doing is going through it with a nit comb and looking for anything they can bitch about. And I'll be entirely, you know, entirely honest. I didn't play. I had the beta for Sea of Thieves. I didn't play it. I didn't care. I was just like, yeah, I'm not really sure I'm into this. I don't even know that I want to play it. I'm just kind of neutral to it. And then it launched on Game Pass. And I thought, okay, fine, fuck it. I got Game Pass. Let's try this out. Convinced Duda to get Game Pass. Loaded up Sea of Thieves, and we have spent so much fucking time plundering. Like, neither one of us even expected to like the game, and we were just like, you know what? This ain't bad.
You want to know what I think is the best part of Sea of Thieves? Crossplay.
Yeah, I don't even... I always forget that that's even a thing.
The main reason why is because hanging out in chat, my good friend Doc Havoc, Ian Griffin, he's done a bunch of stuff with the show already. He doesn't own an Xbox One. He has a PC, and he has Sea of Thieves.
Yeah, I was going to say, he could even have Game Pass.
And, yeah, me, him, and Chris have been playing together. And, you know, Chris is playing on PC, Ian's playing on PC, I'm playing on Xbox. And I get to play with them because of Play Anywhere and Crossplay.
That's a huge deal. And those are other aspects that people bitch about. Oh, nobody uses Play Anywhere. Why would you want to play it on PC? Just get your Xbox or don't have one at all. It just makes good sense to cater to the customers.
Mm-hmm.
Where are your customers at? Oh, well, we know they've got PCs because, you know, of this or that. Who the fuck doesn't have a PC at this point in time? So then you just go to where the customers are. Make your games to where they can be played on PC. It's smart. It's logical to do it that way. And it's long-term marketing. And everybody's just like, oh, well, they're going to compete with Sony now. It's not about competing with Sony now.
No.
It's about long-term games.
Oh, no. Microsoft, we're getting raided.
What?
Oh. Vertically impaired and a reckless bunny are raiding us. Oh, dear. I guess I should mention them on the show since they're nice enough to raid with a bunch of viewers. So, thank you. Everyone listening to the MP3, this is like, who gives a fuck?
This show really went downhill once they got Twitch.
They got Twitch and they got affiliated. Now he talks about the people in Twitch all the time. What the fuck? I'm so tired of them.
Still waiting for a pornographic Xbox game.
Yeah,
am I embargoed? Am I embargoed?
I mean, it's not pornographic. Nudity doesn't mean it's pornographic. It's
really goddamn close. It's about as close as you're going to get on Xbox. And it's... I think I'm embargoed. I think until the 3rd. I don't know.
I don't think it's embargoed at all, but, you know, it's not part of this episode. Oh, man. Speaking of, we should probably do some reviews, huh? Unless you got any other news to talk about. Anything that you want to mention that I didn't bring up?
No. That assumes I pay attention to shit. I don't.
Yeah, let's jump into our reviews. First game to talk about tonight is called Penny Punching Princess, developed by Nipponichi Software, published by NIS America. It's coming out April 3rd on the Switch for $39.99. Penny Punching Princess is an isometric brawler that takes place in a world ruled by capitalism where cash is king. Fight or bribe your way to reclaiming your kingdom from the greedy Dragalones. This game is ridiculous, first off. As mentioned in the description, is an isometric, top-down, beat-em-up brawler. So you just run around, kind of like a hack and slash, beat up enemies. The big thing here is that you can bribe enemies. Like, you could beat them up. When you beat up enemies, they'll drop money. And you could just pay them off and get them to join your side. They don't fight for you, at least right away, but... You know, in the town later on, they'll work with you and they'll help you get power-ups and everything else. But the big thing there is that during a fight, if you're getting overwhelmed and you have some extra money, just pop out the calculator, pop in some money, and bribe an enemy into just going away.
Just leave me alone. Here's 50 much. Cents.
Well, it's really, really interesting because not only does it work on enemies, it works on pretty much everything. If there's traps in the dungeon that you're playing or traps on the stage that you're going through, you could just bribe it. If there's a flame pit on the ground and you're like, I don't want to fuck with that flame pit, just buy it. And then it stops working.
Wow.
If there's a locked gate, just pay to unlock it. If there's a buzzsaw on the ground, just fucking pay. And it turns off. And all of this stuff matters because in between levels, when you go back to your castle, you know, where you take care of your skill upgrades and you take care of your equipment and everything else, that is where you use the things that you've bribed. The only way to get skill points in this game is through finding collectible statues. Or if you have enough characters or enemies working for you, you can use them to create statues. And when you create a statue, it gives you a skill point. You know, save up the skill points, buy whatever upgrades you need to get. Oh, excuse me. And everything is just done with money. You buy the enemies off, you buy the traps off, and you use those to get more skills. And then, of course, you pay to get the more skills and more armor and everything else. Just the bribing aspect is such a cool, unique twist to the game. Also, because it is... What were you saying?
I said, yeah, that's interesting.
It's just, it's really neat because most games, you know, if there's a trap on the floor, you just try to dodge it or you just deal with it. And this one, you just pay and it goes away.
I guess you could do that in your life. Just be like, oh, this door is locked.
Yeah.
Here's $5.
You also have the ability to shake down your enemies. As you beat them up, they have on their hit point gauge, they'll have little sections where if you hit that, it's a break point. And from there, depending on the control method that you do, you can either tap the screen when they're in the break mode, or you could shake the analog stick, and they'll just start dropping money everywhere. And holy shit, Vertically Impaired just dropped 1,500 biddies. Holy damn, dude, wow. Thank you. That helped our biddy to refitty my shitty compitty goal by like an entire percent and a half. Holy shit, thank you very much, dude. That is very, very kind of you and generous, especially because you're already a subscriber as well.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, back to the game. Because it is a NIST title, it also has that ridiculous sense of humor. You know, in between cutscenes has like the radio voice of in a land of monsters run amok or whatever else. It just has that cartoon narrator voice that you're just expecting to hear when there's some kind of weird comedy stuff. The humor is on point. The fighting mechanics are on point. My only real gripe with this game is the controls, because they have touchscreen controls where, you know, you hold the button to pull out the calculator and you could punch in numbers just, you know, tapping on the screen of like 400 and then tap on whatever you want to bribe. Or you can use a controller where you have to hold the button to open up the calculator, and then you have to use an analog stick and hit buttons, and it's very complicated to try getting the numbers in with touchscreen. Yet, when you're using touch controls and you have to tap the screen to shake down an enemy, it's easier to just hit the analog stick. So I kept jumping back and forth between touch controls and control controls, and I couldn't find a good balance. I kind of wish that there was a middle ground option where it just enabled both of them. Like, I would rather use the analog stick to shake down enemies, but still use the touchscreen to punch in numbers. Because when you're trying to punch in the numbers with the controls, it's not done on the right analog stick. It's done on the left, or on the buttons on the left. It is uncomfortable to actually try getting numbers in while trying to run away from enemies. It's very complex getting what you need done. And that's pretty much my only holdup with the game is the controls. I wish there was a hybrid control method that allowed you to do most of it on touchscreen and then whatever, you know, the shakedowns, everything else with just the analog stick. I don't know. My only real gripe with the game, $40. If you got $40, you're looking for a unique, fun brawler that's funny and rewarding, because bribing enemies is always going to be fun. I think it's worth picking up.
Nice.
So $40, I give it a buy it. Good game. Next game to talk about is called Octahedron, developed by Demi Monde, published by Square Enix Collective. This one came out March 20th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $12.99. Surf through a pulsating underground world on platforms pulled from thin air in this challenging psychedelic action platformer that has you defying gravity to a pumping beat. Cole, tell us about this one.
That's a pretty good description. So it literally is a platformer. Surprise. But it's got a little bit of a rhythm element to it. Each level has its own song, and they're very electronic-y. I'm not good with genres. I just go, yes, I like this song, or no, I don't. But they have a very electronic vibe to them, and each song has its own BPM, so that if you've got the level down and you know what you're doing really well, you will actually move through the level in time with the music, which is really cool. However, if you don't have your timing down, you're not going to be frustrated. Like, you can still get through the game even if you're not musically inclined like me. I struggle very much when it comes to rhythm. So I found that despite that, I was still able to just take my time and work through a level until I figured out the puzzle. And then I was able to just go back and then play it again faster and in tune to the beat. And then I was able to you know, rack up, you know, extra awards for time or whatever.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do that to beat it. You can still progress through the game, even if you just move slowly and work your way through the puzzles. So each level, I keep talking about the levels. I guess I should describe them a little bit, huh? Each level starts with your character at the bottom, and your character is just a little dude with an octahedron for a head. everything is incredibly vibrant, bright neon colors on a dark bluish, not quite black background. And the level is vertical.
Midnight blue.
Yeah. So it's a vertical level, and your goal is basically get your dude to the top. It's very simple, but the there's a hitch. Yes, it's a platformer, but you have to make some of your platforms. And in the earlier levels, you can only have 2 to 4 platforms on you at a time. And when you run out, you have to touch one of the surfaces that's there as part of the level in order to restock your platforms and get more. As you progress later levels, you can have as many as 9 or more platforms, but as you start out, you're stuck with 2 to 4. This is where you've got to really start to think about how you're going to move your character through the level, because there will be obstacles. Later on, there's like these projectiles that will chase you, for example, or there are little, octahedron bugs, and they will shoot at you, and you have to dodge them. To make it a little easier, though, you are not stuck with just like plain flat platforms the whole time. You'll eventually unlock, in addition to having extra platforms, you can choose special types of platforms. One of them, for example, shoots rays down underneath it, like spikes, and will destroy whatever enemies are under it. Or you can set it in a certain area to knock out a platform so that you can get to the collectibles, because you have to collect, I think it's 30 octahedrons for each level.
Yeah, and then the 8 triangle pieces, I think, in each stage as well.
So, those
fucking triangles, by the way. Those fucking triangles.
They're in some of the worst spots. But it's not, again, you can play the whole level and get through it and would be Donovan. Can play the whole level and get through it and not collect any of that stuff, and you're still going to progress. But eventually you will get to a point where you need to have so many in order to move on to the next chapter, if you will, if you want to break them down into chapters. It's kind of
like collecting stars in a mobile game, except this one, it's just collecting collectibles in a normal game.
And there's so many of them that it doesn't take much. Like, I found that I had enough to progress 3 or 4 levels before I could even get to the gate to progress.
Nice.
Like, and I wasn't even actively trying to just collect, because at the time I didn't realize I even needed that. And then I was just like, oh, I'm on level 3, but my meter is full. Okay. Yeah.
I dabbled with this one a little bit myself. It's trippy as hell. I love the music in it. Visually, it's a treat. The controls were kind of weird to get used to.
You think so? I didn't have any trouble with the controls. I picked them up pretty quickly.
I mean, I was able to pick them up, but when I first started, just the concept of like holding the platform button down and then still needing to be able to jump. I know they have ways to, don't they have a controller remapping in there somewhere in the options, or at least different control schemes?
You know, I didn't even look for them because I didn't. Normally, like, I only go looking for controller options if I'm struggling.
Like, I think the game would be a lot easier if I was able to switch the platform to a trigger, which I'm sure I'm able to do. I just didn't mess with the options that much.
I could have swore that it was that you could use the trigger for the platform.
For me, it was the X button.
I think you can use the trigger too, though.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Because I feel like I was using the trigger and I was like...
It's possible. I only messed with like the left trigger. I only dabbled in it. You reviewed it. I dabbled in it.
I'm trying to remember, like, did I use the trigger? I'm fairly certain. I do remember, you know, the directions tell you to press X, but I remember bumping the trigger and being like, oh, I can use that instead. And it was more comfortable.
Oh, maybe I should bump buttons more often then.
Yeah. but that's the curse of crooked fingers is I randomly bump things. And then I'm just like, oh, I can use that button.
Hooray. But speaking of the review, $13 on this one. What do you think of it?
I give this a solid buy it. I really enjoyed it. There's a lot of platformers that are kind of hard just for the sake of being hard. And I didn't feel like this one was ever, you know, uncharacteristically unfair. Like, it was just like, I can manage this if I take my time and figure it out. And I like that. It was nice to actually be able to progress through a platformer without wanting to break something.
Yeah.
So I was happy with it. Definitely.
Cool. Next game to talk about is called The American Dream, developed and published by Samurai Punk. This one came out March 14th on PlayStation VR and Steam for Vive and Oculus Rift for $19.99. Look down the barrel of a future where all your everyday needs are solved with guns. Samurai Punk presents The American Dream, a satirical virtual reality trip through a 1950s World's Fair where you learn to live your life with guns. This game is fucking insane. This is another VR game that I put some time into streaming, and I think the unanimous decision was that this game is just batshit crazy, and it's amazing for it. This is a mixture of a job simulator, a life simulator, a shooting gallery, and like a train ride or a roller coaster ride. The way it works is you go through your entire life from birth to death, learning how to work in a world where everything is done with guns. From the very
literally everything. Yeah,
literally everything. From the very beginning where your mother is feeding you with a gun. So yes, a baby is putting its mouth onto a gun barrel to eat food, which is just insane. Later in the game, you have your first job working in a burger joint where, you know, you put a burger on the grill and then to flip it, you shoot the fucking burger to flip it. There's a dance scene at your prom where you learn to dance with guns. So you're like throwing your arm up in the air, your other arm up in the air, just shooting up in the air out to the side, point at your dance partner and fire at them. I don't know how more people don't die in this. It is just... This game is just absolutely insane, and just I can't put into words how crazy it is. You were there. You watched me play this. What did you think of the gun usage?
Oh, how very topical.
Yeah, there's been how many shoot? Clearly, the timing of the release on this was never going to be good. In the day that we're living in where it seems like there's a shooting every other day, I don't think this could have come out at a good time at all.
Yeah.
So I think that they went more of a satirical method with lots of humor to it and just completely over the top helps it stand out from if they did something more serious and more gritty.
Yeah.
I think the lightheartedness helps. Let's talk about
that reload animation.
Oh my God. Reloading in this game, because everything is done kind of like on a roller coaster, you're sitting in a chair in a cart the entire time, and when your gun runs out of bullets, you have buttons on each side, because, you know, the only thing you do in this game is hold guns. So with gun in hand, you hit the button on the side, on either the left or the right, or both if you want. The game goes into bullet time slow-mo as a new magazine just pops up in the air. And you have to take the gun and hit the gun to the magazine to get it loaded. It was the most incredible, badass and ridiculous thing I've ever done in a VR game. It's just words cannot properly describe how crazy this game is. I was at a Best Buy earlier today talking with the one guy who works there, Jack, and he was asking if I played any good VR stuff lately. And I mentioned the American Dream as well as Moss, by the way. I will constantly rave about Moss. And I just couldn't properly explain how over the top ridiculous the American Dream is. It is so goddamn fun. It is so satisfying. The gun play, the aiming, everything works really well. My only gripe was with the sniper rifle because I have kind of shaky hands to begin with. And trying to aim with that thing was just murder for me. Like when you're trying to answer your neighbor's questions by shooting the answers. You're asked a question and you have two options and you have to shoot them with a fucking sniper rifle. It's just, oh my God. Dark Meek is pointing out that I would toss out clips of the guns simply to get new ones. And it was amazing. It was just absolutely amazing.
It was funny because you could definitely tell your right hand dominant, though, because the left catching the ammo with the left gun was always a little shaky.
I always missed with the left. It was fun, though. The $20 on this one for how varied the game is and how it's constantly changing things up, I think it's a good price for it. There's a lot to do in the game. There's good reason to replay the stages to get, you know, better scores, more money, to find all the collectibles. There's hidden targets all around the game that you have to try and find. I know I missed a few of them because I would see some during the segments in between levels where you're riding the cart. I missed a couple there that I saw. For $20, this is an absolute buy. I put this one up there with Moss as just an absolute must own for PlayStation VR. It is awesome.
It's definitely insane.
Insane is light.
Yeah.
It is bad. And the fact that they have a live action video to start it off of like a woman stirring a bowl with a gun or like serving corn on the cob, but you want to off the cob. So she shoots the whole fucking cob of corn and it turns into just kernels. Oh my God.
It has the whole 1950s vibe to it, which is just makes it that much crazier and better.
It's so good. It is so good. But next game to talk about is called The Count Lucanor or Lucanor. I don't know how it's said. Developed by Baroque Decay, published by Merge Games. It released March 21st on Xbox One for $14.99. Previously on the Switch, Steam, and PS4. Join Hans in a fantasy world and experience a unique adventure full of surprises and challenges. Get hooked on an immersive tale where every decision counts and every clue is a piece to solve the puzzle and get the treasure. Unravel the sordid secrets of the castle, meet colorful characters, and remember, horror always lurks beneath the surface. Cole, tell us about this one.
You ever play a game and at the end of it, you put down the controller and you're just like, the fuck just happened to me? That's this game. So, in the very beginning, we meet Hans, who is a little pixel dude, and it's his birthday. He's turning 10. He's very expectant that he's going to receive all kinds of goodies for his birthday, only his family is poorer than dirt. And his mother has to let him know that because his father's gone to the war, they don't have the money for, you know, a big cake and a big party. And so Hans decides that, you know, he's tired of living a less than ideal life, and he's going to run away and he's going to become rich. Don't think that's how it works, but when you're 10 years old, you make questionable decisions. So we take over control of Hans and we lead him on his journey. And his mother, who, if it were me, I would have beat the kid's ass and been like, whatever, go to bed. But she's a very supportive mother, and she gives him the last of their money, the last of their food, and sends him on his way. Happy birthday, you're a man now. See you later, 10-year-old.
Now you're a man! A man!
So, at this point, you take control, and you lead Hans off onto his new life, in hopes of becoming rich. And as you do this, you start to run into various characters along the way. There will be plenty of NPCs, and you have to decide, are you going to help them, or are you going to literally tell them to fuck off and flip them the bird, because that's what I like to do. What you do in these moments affects how the game plays out for you later on. So choose wisely. You might decide to help somebody. One beggar has a broken down cart and he's going to lose his job and he's terrified. And if you offer him gold to help him out, he's not going to be happy with one. He might take two. Whether that helps you or hurts you in the long run, you won't know until you run up on it. And, you know, literally every choice you make will come back on you one way or another, good or bad. And it will affect the game. Hans's journey eventually leads him to a castle where he runs into, I think it's pronounced Kobold. Kobold? I'm gonna go with Kobold. A blue Kobold who, has the problem where he has to find an heir for a wealthy lord that doesn't have an heir. But it has to be a nobleman. And obviously, Lucanor, Hans, jeez. I was reading the notes and I got sideways. Hans is not a nobleman, but he says that he is. And so he gets sent on this trial where he has to guess the name of the kobold. And that is where you actually start playing and realize that things in this world are batshit crazy. We are talking satanic goats that will chase you and terrify you. And everything in this castle where you are searching out these letters for this character's name to try to solve the puzzle and prove that you're worthy. Everything's in the dark and you have candles and you have to be mindful of where you place your candles at because you don't have enough to light up everywhere. And you also don't want to light up everywhere because you cannot fight those satanic goats. There's no combat in this game. It is all stealth and puzzles. So you have to be really thoughtful and, you know, work your way around.
Dark Mika, satanic goats. You say that like they're not all satanic.
They're not all the, okay, Winchester might have been pretty bad. not all satanic, but these goats are definitely satanic.
Oh, Lord.
It's very crazy. It's just out there. It's a lot of fun. The puzzles weren't anything, you know, that I didn't feel like I could take a few minutes and look at and work out, but it was definitely a lot harder to be stealthy. Just in the nature of everything's dark and sometimes you don't have a choice but to walk into an area and drop a candle. And by that point, you're already being chased by satanic goats and you don't know where to hide. So it's not easy. That's for sure. The whole dying thing brings up my biggest complaint with the game, and that would be the save system. So, in order to save, you have to pay gold coins. It's one coin per save. You will find coins sparingly throughout the world, but otherwise you get them from interactions with NPCs. And if you try to take the approach of saving liberally because you think you're going to die frequently, as I like to do, you may find that you need important items and you do not have the gold or cannot acquire the gold for those items because you have used your money to save. Yeah. So I am never, ever a fan of a system that ties saves to in-game currency because you can really fuck yourself. I know personally. I messed myself up pretty bad and had to spend a lot of time just aimlessly wandering around and dying far more than I should in hopes of finding enough coins because at least I had a good save point.
That's good, at least.
So that is my only real complaint, is just that, you know, saves shouldn't be tied to currency, especially if you need that currency for necessary items.
Yeah.
Because you get in a position where you're stuck. Other than that, and just the general difficulty, which wasn't anything that you can't get around if you're saving frequently enough.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lot of fun. It was just so weird, and I just kept finding myself going, "What am I doing?"
So this is like crazy, occult crazy, like everyone's going to die crazy. And the American Dream was cheeky shenanigans crazy.
Yeah, this is crazy dark. This might hurt your feels or trigger violent flashbacks if you've been in a cult.
Nice. So $15, your thoughts?
I give it a really solid try it. It's just not going to be for everybody. It's pretty niche. And the whole save thing is just kind of a thorn in my side. Because you can literally fuck your whole save up to not be able to progress if you're not careful.
Fuck your world up completely.
Fuck your world. The satanic goats will do horrible things to you. And then you'll be sad, and then you have to start all over from scratch and be broke and poor and not be a nobleman again.
Nice. Well, we are going to jump over to our pre-recorded interviews reviews, because that's what we do on these shows anymore.
That segue, though.
Yeah, I know. Seriously. So let's go do that now. Go. All right. Next game to talk about is called Soul Divide, Sword of Darkness, originally developed by Psycho, port developed and published by Zero Div. It released March 22nd on the Switch for $7.99. Borg heard a rumor that the Army of Satan was searching for treasures called Ceres Stones, which led him to think that the time for revenge had come. Borg, a holy knight in Miltia, was in a forest town working for a mission when the king of Satan, Ifter, invaded the kingdom of Miltia with Datilos armies. Upon hearing the news, Borg immediately returned to Miltia, but the kingdom had been destroyed. It's since been 7 years, but this tale of magic, sword, and vengeance starts now. And embarking on this tale of magic and swords and vengeance, Tim Ekibus. Tim, how are you doing?
Good.
did you enjoy the armies of Satan?
I'm going to go with a yes on this on this particular... on this particular one. Yeah, no, I'm just pulling up some information on Psycho and all that.
Soul Divide? What is with the armies of Satan, or is it Satan?
I also was able to pull up a import review of this game from 1998 written by James Milkey.
Oh, God.
On GameSpot. Got a 7.5.
Ooh.
Yeah. So there you go. There you go. Boom. Done. Out.
No, but what did he say about it?
What is this game? I'm not going to just read his review. That would probably be bad. probably. So, this game is a scrolling shooter game. That is old. Spoiler. Yeah, it's like 20 years old at this point. I think it was originally released in 98, 97, right around there. 97 in the arcades there. Psycho being a company that's well known for games such as Gunbird and Strikers 1945 and Cannon Spike, which is a personal favorite of mine. I love that game. So, but anyway, they did like a lot of arcadey shooter stuff, right? In the late 90s through the early 2000s. And this is one of their odder releases, I would say. So yeah, this is horizontal scrolling. You pick one of three characters. It's kind of a fantasy-ish setting, let's say. There's dragons. Like, I mean, your dudes have like wings or otherwise fly. The
height of the Red Bull craze, right?
Yeah, sure. The the graphics are pre-rendered CG, like Donkey Kong Country.
Interesting.
Imagine that. Yeah, so they're not spread. Yeah, they're these weird little, quasi 3D looking things, which, you know, not enough games went that route. It's a real product of its time. So it's a very interesting thing for that alone.
I don't know, man. We had Rise of Robots.
That's true. Yeah, there's that. Yeah, there's a handful around that era, you know, Vector Man, shit like that. But yeah, so this scrolling shooter, pre-rendered CG, like fantasy graphics. You have your shot, your like standard freaking rapid fire shot. You have a melee attack. What?
Because in a shmup?
In a shmup. So, because you'll get enemies that will just fly up, and there's enemies that will only attack via melee, too. They'll fly right up in your face, and, yeah. And your melee attacks seem to do a lot of damage, so it does behoove you to use your melee. Though it's difficult, I will say, because there's often enemies in the back line still shooting at you while enemies are flying up in your face. There's not a lot of room on the screen to maneuver around. Like, it's pretty tight just with, like, the size of the characters to really dodge around and stuff. You got a pretty healthy life bar. Also, there's a decent, like, pretty good magic system in this game. In that you have a magic meter, you have spells that you pick up as you go through the stages. Some are, you know, some you keep the whole game. Some are like one-time use spells, you use them once and then they're gone. Like, there's some that are particular to each character. So there's like a fire blast, there's like a lightning spell that hits everything on the screen, there's a freeze spell, like wind, slowing time, there's a death spell that just kills everything, including bosses sometimes.
Oh, wow.
Like other big... summoning spells and stuff. Yeah, no, like the way to like smoke bosses in this game is to hold like your high level spells and like use them, because they will fucking work a lot of the time. Sometimes it's like, I remember one time I used death on a boss and just did nothing, and I was like, oh. But there was another time I did it and it killed it, and I was like, that's great, this is awesome.
That is hilarious that you could just use a death spell and kill the boss.
Yeah, so yeah, on some of them, yeah it works. The stages are pretty short, which sucks. It's like you'll get one quick wave of like filler enemies, and then you go straight into like, you know, stronger enemy patterns, and then it's like a boss. Like I can't emphasize enough like how short the stages are. When you're used to like something, you know, a stage in a shooter that might go like a minute or two, these feel like they're like 30, 45 seconds, if that, before you're at the boss. Like, it's really, really brief.
Well, 90s arcade trying to get people in and out as quick as they could. Oh my god,
this game is trying to fuck you over to get your quarters. It is so funny. There is a bit of branching path in the game. You after the first stage, you pick which way you want to go. And yeah, it's more interesting than it's actually like high quality, I would say. But it's so interesting and weird for me to, like, you know, just to have this, like, you know, horizontal scrolling shooter game that also has, like, this up-close melee mechanic that you better use, or else enemies are just going to fly up and beat the crap out of you. Like, strategizing when you can get into position to, like, knock out a quick melee combo is super important. So that's a very different feel to it. Like, it's definitely frustrating in the sense that it is a 90s arcade game that's meant to eat your quarters. So this game is like trying to fuck you over left and right.
Yeah.
Like when you get to like the last stage and when you die and continue, it takes you all the way back to the beginning of the stage.
Oh god.
So you can't even like force your way through it by loading up your continues, which
can't even quarter spam it.
Yeah. There is, you know, a pretty elaborate set of options for the game with different graphics, sound options, but also, yeah, you can throw in infinite continues, you can extend your life bar, you can do all kinds of stuff in there to kind of play with the difficulty I mean, that's pretty standard in like modern arcade releases, I think, that they just let you kind of go ham in there.
It seems to be the same engine that Hamster uses with all their Arcade Archives games. It works.
Yeah, it's a different company releasing it for sure, but it's very similar, seemingly, if not the same, but very, very similar. Music is nothing to speak of, really. It's just like, it's just so weird, man. And it's definitely not going to be for everybody. Like, it's definitely not the highest quality shooter. I mean, like, Strikers 1945 is out on this Switch, and that's a better shooter. But it's just so weird and interesting that, like, some people are definitely going to want to check it out if they haven't checked it out already. Like, it is also out on, like, Steam and some other platforms, like, hanging around there. But, you know, you have it here portable on the Switch. It is fun. Like, I was, you know, getting better, like, at grinding through it as I played. And checking out different characters, and like, I just can't say enough how much the novelty of the magic and having different magic spells. I mean, like, literally there's like 8 or 9 of them. Like, there's a lot that eventually string out there, and like, you know, the magic meter, and like, yeah, enemies are dropping, usually almost every enemy seems to drop a power up that either gives you life, gives you magic power, ups your attack power, You know, it just feels good. Gives you higher maximum life, higher maximum magic, or they're dropping one of the one-time use magic spells, so that feels good. But it's just so damn weird.
So it's good, it's weird, it's not the greatest, but it's really weird, and that's cool.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I think, you know, for what how much was it? Like $7 or $8?
$8.
This falls squarely into the fuck it, why not category. Like if you're kind of leaning towards it, then, you know, maybe okay if you want to wait for a sale. But, you know, for, and it has, you know, local co-op on it. You can break off your Joy-Cons and play two player on one screen. It has that too. So yeah, it's just such an interesting thing. I think just like to show people, like,
so fuck it,
yeah,
just buy
$8. Yeah, fuck it. Like, yeah, if this, you know, you want a shooter that's like this obscure, like not very well loved 90s arcade shooter that just has like the, you know, just to see it really like graphically, it's like it's just such an oddity. So that's like what I got out of it. Like, I'm definitely pretty happy. I had never seen this game before. I'd seen a lot of Psycho's other stuff, but this one had never been put in front of me. It's just so
that's
interesting.
That's what I love about these arcade releases, is this is shit that you would never see in America normally, and now for $8 you could own an arcade game that you may have never seen in your life before.
I'd say if you're at all inclined, check it out. If you're a shooter fan, then fuck it, why not.
$8, just do it.
$8, man.
Cool. Well, yep. Tim, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Any final thoughts to sum it up?
Oh man, one of my favorite things about this game is how they're trying to figure out how to get to Hell Island. I almost forgot to mention that.
Hell like Island.
Hell Island. The story is just nonsense in this game, and that in particular stood out to me in them trying to find the way to Hell Island. Like, Hell Island must be around here somewhere. So good luck trying to find Hell Island, friends.
All right, next game to talk about is called SteamWorld Heist, developed and published by Image Inform Games. This came out December 28th on the Switch for $19.99. Prepare for boarding. In SteamWorld Heist, you command robot pirates in epic tactical shootouts. It's turn-based strategy with an action twist. By manually aiming your weapons, you'll pull off insane bullet-bouncing trick shots. Checking this one out live during the show, apparently. Norg, how you doing, buddy?
Shut up, I'm playing the game.
What
and that's
think
funny, because right, the best part was, as soon as you said trick shots, I actually shot an amazing trick shot off between a ladder, off of a roof, off the floor, off the roof, and into the guy's head.
Damn, dude.
I fucking love this game. Holy shit. Oh. The best part is that now it says turrets are coming, and every time I see turrets, I think, oh, Tourette's. We're back to that again.
Oh, God. I didn't say anything this time. So for the people who don't know what the game is that we're talking about, why don't you tell us what this game is that you're reviewing tonight?
Oh, hang on one second. There we go. There goes the turret. All right.
My balls.
Oh, my goodness. SteamWorld Heist. Ultimate Edition. Man, oh man, oh man. It's not very often that you'll send me a game and like, oh, okay, I'll play this game and then I'll review it. And then I'm just going to go back to Dragon Quest Builders or, God help me, Skyrim.
Oh, God.
Jeez, I just can't quit Skyrim. I just checked my thing recently. This is just on the Switch version. I've already put in over 150 hours into Skyrim.
Holy shit, dude.
And I haven't even done like an eighth of the main quests. I've just done all the side shit, like the Brotherhood and the Thieves Guild and just all the fun stuff. Anyway, but that's neither here. Oh, and I've done some of the expansion stuff, but that's neither here nor now, because you know what I'm not playing right now? That's Skyrim. I've put over 150 hours into that game, and I'm not even thinking about it, because SteamWorld Heist is this much fun. I didn't know, honest to goodness, that there was such a good platformer, tactical, shooting, thinking, searching, exploring game out there, and that it actually has an amazing sense of humor. I mean, when you sent it to me, I downloaded it, opened it up, and watched the intro. I loved the old timey voice when he was talking about all of the things that are going on. because I was actually recently listening to a whole bunch of old time radio at Johnny Dollar. You have to look that one up sometime. It's the most amazing, amazing old time radio.
And I hope Johnny Dollar is better than Nick Manning.
It's debatable.
That's as,
see, you're the that's one who brought Nick Manning.
That's as close as we're getting with that, by the way.
That's right. Wet pancakes. Yeah, Johnny Dollar. Look that up sometime, and you'll thank me for it later. It's one of the best old-time radio programs ever to be produced. But it starts out with a guy talking like he's an old-time radio. And I was impressed because the guy got the general gist of it, and the animations were fantastic. And I thought, okay, I am going to start this game, and I am going to spend the whole game fighting guys that look like Trapjaw from He-Man. I'm okay with this. And I had no idea what I was getting into. And then it just kept getting better and better and better and better, earning more weapons, hooking up with more, I guess, water in this case. And so far up to this point, I've managed to pull together all of the stars in what I'm guessing was the original or first campaign. Being that this is the Ultimate Edition and I don't have any background in this game to any semblance of any other platform, there must have been DLC at some point or an addition or an add-on or something. And I'm now in the zone where I'm fighting against like the Royalist bots or something. I'm getting all the names wrong because I still have Trapjaw in the brain. And and it gets exponentially harder as soon as you get there. It's spectacular. I love the fact that you can scale the difficulty. I never changed the difficulty settings in this particular game because I just wanted to experience it as at its default setting and see how it went. And I gloriously died several times on several levels, just like complete wipeout. And it was great. And it was almost as satisfying as when you walk out with only one character left out of the four you had with one hit point left. And you're like, suck it. So it was very
straight
satisfying.
By the hair of my balls on that one.
I'm not even sure if they have balls because they're all robots and stuff. But
truck nuts.
Lug nuts. Now we're talking. If you can get back to the devs and ask them if they'd be willing to pull together like an anatomically correct summarization of the characters, that would just totally make my day.
Well, if they're listening, they know how to get in touch with me.
There you go. Man, this game is just tons of fun. Great, great puns, like awful, like dad joke level puns. The strategy is different because in several of the levels, because sometimes I would go back and replay a lot of the levels just to build up experience, and they're not the same. There's some element of what they call roguelike to that, in that not all the levels are generated exactly the same way. It's easy to just put down and pick up and put down and pick up at any time, which lends itself greatly to the Switch platform, and it's not frustratingly difficult. It's just fun. The only real criticism I was able to think of in the game was for some of the longer levels or for some of the ones where you end up having to repeat them several times, it'd be nice if there was a function that allowed you to speed up some of the more tedious stuff, like when you're running up and down a ladder and going through a door, running and running and running. If they're like hit a trigger button, and maybe it's even in there, I just didn't find it while I was farting around with the buttons, but just an opportunity to like speed up the more tedious parts of it. That has been a staple for a variety of tactics style or turn-based games. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And that would have been a nice feature to have, but it's not a make or break thing by any stretch. Sound effects are stellar. There was one instance where I knocked the can off of one of the robots and he kept falling down the different levels and I kept hearing the tin can sound for like 2 minutes until he finally settled on the bottom floor. I was laughing my head off the whole time. That's probably the kind of thing that would piss off somebody else, but I thought it was amusing. And
that's something that you should have recorded.
I should have. I really should have. I don't know if this game has the video function or not. And by the time I could have thought to get my phone out, it actually stopped.
That's just baked into the Switch hardware.
No, not every game can do the video thing.
Yeah, I mean, the function is built into the Switch hardware. The games whether or not they block it.
Right. Is it a matter of blocking it or enabling it?
I think it's blocking.
You mean they have to go out of their way to block it?
I would imagine, because it was what, near the end of the final station that you were running into it. I wonder if that was like a scene that was blocked off due to how late in the game it was.
I suppose that's possible. Yeah, when we were trying, when I ended up having to use my phone and tweak all of the exposure settings just to get a good video of that.
Yeah.
That was another really good one. But that's not this game. We're not talking about them anymore. But yeah, and music was spectacular, especially when you beat, what was the character's name? Chop Sue. Again, just awful, awful puns left and right. They had a character boss whose name was Chop Sue. Which is funny, because my grandfather, bless his soul and his beloved memory, every form of Asian food was chop suey. Take him out for teriyaki. Yep, that chop suey was delicious. Take him out for Thai food. I didn't know chop suey came like this. Seriously.
Take him for tacos. Oh, that was some chop suey in a taco shell, I guess.
I prefer my chop suey a little more crunchy. I don't know.
I had chop suey on a pizza the other day. They called it pizza, but I know it's chop suey.
Everything is chop suey.
So you've been raving about SteamWorld Chop Suey. I got to know.
Yes.
$20 on this one. What is your verdict?
Only $20? 20 yes. Earth dollars? 20 simoleons? That's it?
Dollary dues even.
Buy that shit. Seriously. And in actual seriousness, for $20, I should look. In fact, I'm going to pull it back up again. I want to see how many hours I've already put into this thing. No, I don't want to update you. Oh, see, there's the can sound.
It just sounds like you're breaking shit over there. That's what I hear.
I mean, that's usually what's happening, and there's a precedent for that.
True.
There we go. Okay, Steve, it just says first played 8 days ago.
Helpful.
That's not helpful. Thanks.
So you've put Switch. 8 days of play into it.
Yes.
Straight days.
I haven't stopped playing it.
I haven't slept in a week. Please kill me.
But yeah, so $20, and it hasn't gotten old, and it hasn't gotten boring, and it hasn't gotten tedious, and the story remains fun, and it keeps adding characters, and it keeps adding different tiers of weaponry and items and cool things to discover. It just keeps getting better and better and better. And again, I'm assuming I'm already into the DLC. So the original game would have, I guess, would have already stopped by now. And already that was good. So $20 for this Ultimate Edition is an absolute buy.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, I know it's good because I covered it on PS4. So.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. I know experience. It's good. I can agree that it's good. And I'm going to throw this out there just in case they're listening. I want to cover this game a third time because I still want you to bring it to Xbox.
There you go. Come on, guys. Make it happen. Come on,
guys. Let's do it.
Help a brother out.
Fucking do it.
Do it.
Do it. Do it. George, any final thoughts to sum it all up?
Dropping loads.
All right. Moving on from the craziness that is George. The next game to talk about is called Brutalism, developed and published by Stroboscope. It released March 26th on Steam for $4.99. First-person platform puzzle game. Navigate an ever-changing world based on 579 vertigo-inducing rods by controlling their movement patterns forward or backward. Travel between the glittering surface world and the dark electric world. Watch your step, use your sniper rifle wisely, words, and try to make it to the end. Checking this one out, Royal Sefton. Royal, how are you doing?
I was just done cleaning my sniper rifle.
Sniper rifle? Can you talk better than me today?
I'm gonna try.
It's been a long show, man. You got to give me a break.
I will.
So what is Brutalism?
So I'm assuming it's probably inspired by like the aesthetics of Brutalism or the architecture of Brutalism, because it's not that hard, but
Of Brutalism? What is that?
So that's where you basically make everything as simple and square as possible. Mm. Like the fewer surfaces, the fewer lines, the better. So that pretty well sums up what the game looks like too. If an Atari 2600 had a voxel engine, this would probably be what crawled out of Howard Scott Warshaw's sketchbook.
Oh God.
Yeah. So Think Minecraft, only blockier and without textures.
And more fucked up?
Yes. It's kind of like a little 3D fever dream. It's weird, dude. This is one of the strangest games I've played in a while. And the whole 2600 analog is not far off because it's also one of the simplest. You start out on these, I guess you'd call them shores. I mean, the big, big blocks, but you can hear what's supposed to be like waves crashing on the shore. And you find these little monolith type things that spin around. They look like mirrors. And you walk into it and you go into kind of a dark world version of where you were. And those different vertigo inducing controllable rods, mm-hmm. that's what makes up the world. It's like a grid of these big blocks. And you can use the Q and E keys on the keyboard to kind of shift them around. But it's not intuitive. It's like some will go up, some will go down, and at different rates. And you have to do that to negotiate this maze to find another portal or another one of these mirror-type things to go back to, you know, the normal world, shall we say. And you can take falling damage, but it's not really like a health meter type game. If you just fall too far, you die. So it's important that you navigate these pillars correctly, but that's only half the trick. Once you teleport back, then you got to pick up a bullet. I assume it's a bullet. It looks kind of bullet-shaped, and it's red. So you pick up the lipstick, and then you go back to the dark world. and then you have to find this creepy-ass face. It looks like a voxel Gru or something. Oh, and
lipstick.
It kind of looks like lipstick. I don't know. Anyway, you pick up this bullet, you go back to the dark world, I'll call it that. And now you've got this like weird voxel creepypasta critter sitting on one of those pedestals somewhere in the distance. You got to find him and kill him. And you have to shoot the red dot that's somewhere on the rest of his white face. Like white block face. He's all these little blocks, that voxel type thing. But it kind of reminds me of like a Slenderman game, in that if you look at him long enough, you're just dead. Mm-hmm. If you're close enough, you're dead. You have to keep some distance and you have to aim very quickly or you will die. And when you die, all you get is this kind of like weird proto synthwave sound, and then he just gives you this creepy ass grin and then you start over. Like I said, there's no health meter. There's no score, apparently. When I beat some of the levels, I'd get these leaderboards, and only one of them was actually populated with anything. So I don't know if that just means there needs to be more players out there playing it to add to the leaderboard. Didn't see myself in relation to any of it, and I didn't know what the numbers meant. I didn't know
I was going to ask if it was like time or score, but you don't know what it is, so
I'm assuming it's time, because you know there's no way to there aren't like apparent achievements or a way to do something better. The only thing I can think of is if you miss and you have to shoot again, maybe additional shots would result in a lower score. But I think it's time, because I think it's more like you got to race to get the lipstick, and you got to go back and shoot the dude. And then it repeats after there's this like epilepsy inducing thing where all the rods go just completely apeshit. And then you go and climb and find another one of those portals, and then you move on to the next level, which is a different layout, similar process.
So basically, it's a really weird first person puzzle game.
Yes, that is exactly what it is. It is a really weird first person puzzle game.
But is it a good first person puzzle game? Weird first person.
It could be, and there are some things about it that I think are really neat. Like, I think it does a really good job of capturing a creepy atmosphere. I think that its price point is pretty reasonable for the simplicity of the game. I think it has a very unique flavor to it. You know, it's a very unique game, but I think there should be more game. I don't have a clear idea of what my scoring mechanism is. I don't know what the hell I'm doing there, but maybe that's not the point.
So you're saying not more game is in like more content, just more game is in like, what the fuck am I doing direction?
Yeah. I mean, I played another game called Non-Guns a while back, and that was sort of like a roguelite Metroidvania type thing that was all black and white, and you had a score, but you didn't really know what it was for, and you had to collect letters, and I don't remember what they do. It was a very unusual game, and this kind of reminds me of that, but even more Spartan, more spare than even non-guns. Non-guns is one of those games where it was kind of divisive that way. A lot of reviews were negative, saying, I don't know what this is. I don't get it. I kind of get that same feel about Brutalism. It's like, if you're in the mood for kind of a weird trip, yeah, totally. If you're looking for a good sniping simulator, no, this is definitely not that.
So overall, $5 on this one. What do you think?
Try it. I think it really runs the middle ground because, you know, for $5, it's not like you got to buy it. It's going to blow you away. It's awesome. And on the other hand, I don't think it's a bad game per se. I just, again, don't feel like it's as much of a game as it is kind of an experiment. So it's not going to be for everybody. And frankly, it starts to get a little tedious, but it is interesting and initially fairly challenging.
All right. Is it cheap enough to warrant a fuck it, why not? Or is it just too niche and too weird that it'll still turn a lot of people off regardless of the price?
No, to me, it is kind of a fuck it, why not? Because, you know, it's not, I guess for me, it's like if I'm going to throw $5 at a game, it shouldn't be because it's mediocre. It should be because it's unusual. So it kind of scratches that itch, you know?
Makes sense. So if you got $5 sitting around and you want something unique and weird and different, fuck it. Go for it.
Exactly.
And that's why we have that rating.
Yep.
But you're here to talk about one other thing, and that is some brand new DLC for Dungeons 3 called Evil of the Caribbean, developed by Realmforge Studios, published by Calypso Media Digital. It came out March 2nd on Xbox One, PC, and PS4 for, again, only $4.99. After her numerous adventures, Thela has earned herself some peace and quiet, and then never gives subordinates vacation. Evil sends her to the pirate holiday paradise of Tortuga. That's what it is. You know,
yeah, they transpose the letters, yeah.
Because it's not Tortuga, it's Tortuga. Got it. I see what they're doing there. However, it still has a few teeny tiny tasks for its general, such as rum running, still not paying off gambling debts, and dealing with creatures from the depths of the ocean, Cthalo or something like that, right? So I can already tell this is as batshit crazy and funny as the rest of the game. How is the gameplay of the new DLC?
Yeah, so it's definitely in the same vein as Dungeons 3. It feels like a very natural continuation of the campaign. Same narrative, fully narrated, same sense of humor, a lot of pop culture references and the like. In this case, there's Pirates of the Caribbean kind of thrown in the mix.
Nice.
Obviously, a little H.P. Lovecraft in there too. Yeah, so it's you know, you mentioned $5. It is indeed a $5 DLC. It's three levels, but it's three levels that are really pretty high in the difficulty. There's an expectation you should have done your homework with Dungeons 3 to really kick butt at this. And it's also going to provide you with some interesting quests. Right off the bat, you have an escort quest, and those tend to kind of they're not everybody's
divisive.
Favorite. Yeah, be divisive. I overuse the word. But yes, you're gonna have this rum runner's quest where you've got to accompany them to get the rum to your boat. That's the first thing that the likes to get drunk evil sends you to do. And so you've got to build up your base really quickly, defend it really quickly, and send your forces out there to help collect the rum. Full disclosure, I had my ass handed to me. So to me, the audience for this game is going to be not only people who are good at Dungeons 3, but they're looking for something harder than Dungeons 3. And granted, that's not on Hellish mode. It also has the ability to turn on to Hellish. So didn't try that. Not about to hot sauce myself on this one. So yeah, and of course you fight some botanical beast as well. There's some good stuff in this campaign, and I have to go back and say it is a $5 DLC, and the reason I emphasize that is you're not going to see any changes to the tech tree. You're not going to see any huge gameplay changes. You're going to see basically new levels, some new graphics on the assets, and you're going to see a new costume for your elf. That's about the sum of it. But again, if you like the original campaign and you're looking for something harder, this is going to do it for you.
Nice. So it sounds like people who enjoyed the game and want more of it while also getting their ass kicked are going to enjoy this.
Correct. It's definitely a buy it for that audience, you know. If you're expecting it to really turn things on its head or change balances on something, you're not going to get that here. So it's very much for anybody who wants more Dungeons 3, just the way it is, with a few, of course, extra jokes, tweaks, and other such.
Nice. So DLC about not going on vacation is itself not a vacation.
Exactly.
Oh,
evil,
man,
doesn't grant vacations to his subordinates.
It sounds so good, though. I love dungeons, and more dungeons is always good for me. So for $5 overall, what do you think of this?
I think it's a buy it. I think it's a buy it. If you haven't beaten Dungeons 3, it falls more into the try it realm because it will test you.
Test or wreck?
Well, I was trying to be modest. It will wreck you.
It will fuck your world up.
Wrecked him. Damn near killed him.
Oh, Royal. Always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it up between the two of them?
Be ready to fight Cthulhu or something like that.
Yay, we're back with us. Yay.
Yay.
Quick thank you to No Time for Games, who threw us another bitty party with a thousand bits.
That's a lot of bits.
That is a lot of bits. Holy shit. That biddy-dery fitty my shitty compitty goal is, we're up to 4% already. Hot damn.
Yay.
We weren't even at 1. But because of Tony and No Time, we made percents. But thanks again to those guys for doing the reviews, and we are back with us. And next game to talk about is called Ark Park VR, developed and published by Snail Games. This one released March 21st on Steam, Viveport, and Oculus Store for $39.99. Steam has a deluxe edition for $47.99, which includes a tech outfit and Tech Rex mount. Released March 22nd on PlayStation VR for $49.99, has a deluxe edition for $57.99 with a hunter outfit and skeleton Rex. In Ark Park, engage in close encounters with primal species through a series of theme park attractions. Enter by yourself or with a group of adventurous friends and witness dinosaurs roaming in the wild with your own eyes. This is a mixed bag for me. This is basically Jurassic Park in the Ark universe, where the game starts off, you hop in a tram, you ride across an ocean or a lake or whatever it is into this dinosaur park wonderland. And even on the trip over, where you're just riding this monorail across the ocean, you'll see a giant dinosaur just come up out of the water and splash. And it is, with the music playing and with just the sights and everything else looking around, I had a legitimate sense of wonder and awe watching this intro. No lie, my eyes were starting to get a little bit misty just being in this world.
Wow.
Unfortunately, the visuals pulled me out of it. This is not the greatest looking game. Get that out of the way right now. Not the prettiest looking game, and the gameplay itself is very interesting. It's like it tries to do a bunch of different things, and each of them works well enough, but combined together, they feel lacking somewhere along the way. During the tutorial of it, it has its own kind of like little self-contained story where it takes you into the park, into the visitor center, shows you different things that you can interact with. The first time that you're able to pick up like a T-Rex figure and set it down in the visitor center to have a holographic T-Rex pop up around you is awe-inspiring. Like, the legitimate sense of awe in so many of the things you do in this game is incredible. There's a section in the game where you can ride a Triceratops and just, you know, cruise around and look at scenery and just ride and experience and take it all in. And, you know, the first time that you pass by a brontosaurus in a lake, gigantic beast of a dinosaur, just staring up at it and just in awe. That's the only word I could keep coming back to with this game, is just a sense of awe and wonder.
Wow.
And then that's one part of the game. There is another part where there's a lot of exploration and crafting, where you'll go into these set areas and you'll have like a scanner that you could scan the wildlife there to earn DNA to unlock other areas, or you can gather plant material, or you could chop down a tree, or you can mine stuff. It's very just casual crafting that lets you create more weapons and more items. None of it seems like super, super necessary to do, but it's, you know, it puts you in the world and it gives you stuff to do. Then there's battle sections, which are my absolute least favorite part of this game. And the main reason why is because of the gun controls. A lot of VR games, they'll have like a laser sight on the gun so you can kind of see where you're aiming. With this one, everything is done with like the manual sights on the gun, where you have to like aim down the barrel, have the tiny little notch in between the two notches and line it up perfectly.
Which
in, you know, iron sights in a lot of games are going to be good. Even in a lot of VR games, they're good. In this VR game, not really that good. And I don't know if it's how the game tracks or if it's how the VR is tracking, but there are times where I was aiming down the iron sights in the game and my hand in real life was not in front of my face. It was like out at 2 o'clock.
Oh.
Yeah. Ooh. Like it was nowhere fucking close to where it would feel like it needs to be. And it's very disorienting to try holding a gun in front of your face and the gun is just like way off to the side, nowhere near where it needs to be. It makes shooting dinosaurs very hard. It makes trying to accomplish anything with the battle sections near impossible for the most part. I was failing missions repeatedly just because it was so fucking hard to properly aim and shoot things. And it shouldn't be that hard in a shooting game in VR. That's like what VR is for half of the games, is a fucking shooting gallery. And it just was not working in this game at all. I think if they were to either rework the aiming in the game, or if they were, you know, throw us a bone and just like give everything a laser sight to start off. It's frustrating because there were so many just amazing sections of this game where I'm just staring with my mouth wide open at this awe-inspiring scenery and these massive beasts. And then there's just sections of the game that are like so damn frustrating because you can't aim the right way. Nothing just seems to click there. I think the biggest issue with this game, though, is the price tag. $50 on PlayStation VR for this is just, I don't know. I can't see it.
That seems pretty high for a VR game. Are they typically that high?
Not really, no. Like, full retail games are, and I just don't think this has enough content to warrant a $50 price tag. And with the frustration of some of the sections, you know, mixed with those moments of just pure awe and wonder. I keep going back to the awe and the wonder, but that's almost worth the price tag to begin with. It really is. Some of those moments are just incredible to experience. Overall, for the $50 price tag, I'm going to go right in the middle with a try it. There's a lot of cool, good stuff in this game, but there's a lot of mediocre-ish stuff as well.
Yeah.
And for the price tag, I can't give it a buy it. It's not bad, so I don't want to give it a deny it, because it as a game, it doesn't deserve a deny it. There's just so much good stuff in there that it's worth trying out and checking out. I don't know if they plan on releasing any kind of demo for it, but check it out in whatever way you can. But $50, it's too steep for now, so try it.
Makes sense.
Next game to talk about is called Cube 2, developed by Toxic Games, published by Trap Nerve Games. It released March 13th, Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $24.99. You are Amelia Cross, a stranded archaeologist who is awoken among the ruins of an ancient alien landscape. With the distant help of another survivor, you must manipulate the structure of this mysterious world and find a way back home. We had an interview with this one last episode, but now we're going to do a full-on review. So, Cole, take it away.
Okay, so this is...
What are you giggling about? It's like we had to re-record this stuff or something.
And now I've already lost everything. I don't know what to say anymore because I'm thinking, no, I already said that. You are starting at the
beginning. Take it away. You
didn't press record, right?
Oh, yeah, it's recording.
Okay, good.
I could stop it if you want, and you could just talk to nothing.
Again?
Yeah.
Where were you when the lights went out? I was in the dark.
I was in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Anyway, so, take it away, Cole.
So this game is basically Portal with squares or cubes, if you want to be geometrically correct. you do play as Amelia Cross, who has woken aboard an alien spaceship, and she's very much got a case of amnesia. She doesn't know what she was doing before she woke up or any of that, which seems to be a recurring theme these days. I woke up with amnesia and now we're here. Let's play a game.
Would you like to play a game?
Ah, fuck, not this game.
Only with this one, it's like, okay, yeah, I'll play. So I have to be honest, I haven't played the first cube. I'm new to the cube series. And one of the complaints, though, that I noticed about it when I was looking it up so I could come up to speed with what I was about to play, was that the first game was kind of light on story. And that it wasn't really until the director's cut that much of what was happening was even explained at all. So I would like to point out that Cube 2 does not have that problem. The story is very upfront. It's very much a centric part of the game. I lost my train of thought.
Should we start over again?
No, please.
Where were you then? Let's play a game. Would you like to play a game? Where were you in the review?
I'm not going to get through this.
I like when there's a review that I break the Cole.
Please don't break Cole. Cole's already had a rough day.
So anyway, Cube 2 is a really cool game. I had fun chatting with Benny about this one. I enjoy just the different methods that you can use to solve the puzzles in the game. And alternatively, the different ways that you could just fuck around in the game and not accomplish anything.
I have it on good authority that you fucked around with the game quite a bit without actually accomplishing very much.
Can confirm. Source was there.
You took a few green cubes to the face.
A few.
I think that's one of the greatest things about this game is just that you just get to play with the physics of it. If you just want to sit there and launch cubes across a room and not give a fuck about whether or not they're going to land in the appropriate space, you can kind of just do that. You're not going to progress the story, but you can just sit there and launch cubes for days for just the laughs. That's just all you have to do is just enjoy it. There's a lot of emphasis on the physics of launching the cubes and how you move them in the world. And the physics are actually really incredibly well done. I think that kind of affects the types of puzzles that are presented.
In a good way or a bad way? Do you think it's just a limiting thing?
I think it's actually in a good way, even though, I mean, you have three cube colors and you think, okay, there's not a whole lot. Each cube has its own limitations in how it can be used in the world. And yet it's not limiting because of the physics factor. There's environmental factors that you can use, like the oil slicks will change how you can move certain cubes within their limits.
What kind of slicks?
Oil.
I can't help it. I have to. Every time, I have to.
That's just going to be the opening to the show, is me repeating
oil. Oil. Anyway, enough derailing from me.
It does keep what could otherwise be a pretty stifling experience. It keeps it fresh and it keeps it moving along. You're constantly trying to think of how you're going to adjust these cubes in the world to progress and solve these puzzles rather than just saying, okay, well, I'm just going to make a stack of green cubes. That's great. You can make a stack of green cubes. That doesn't mean you can jump up on those cubes. So you have to think about how you're going to maneuver not just the cubes, but also yourself and how you're actually going to progress. Or you can just sit and launch the things in your face all day.
Yeah. But, like me.
But ideally, you want to progress.
Yeah.
And even though you're limited by the physics and the environmental factors, it never feels like you're rehashing the same puzzles. Like, even though there's only so many ways things can move, you're constantly trying to think of a new way to get through. And you're never really going to walk from one puzzle to another and go, oh, well, I already know how to solve this just because of I just did it.
Yeah.
There's always something shifted that you're going to have to rethink. Oh, I have to move it this way now. But that does also lead to my complaint. And that is that, you know, if you're in the early stages of the game and you're moving the cubes around and you fuck up, it's not a huge problem because your solution to the puzzle is probably only, you know, 3 to 5 steps at most. In later stages, you're doing these more complicated puzzles and you have to really think about those physics and stuff. And you could end up having a puzzle that may take 15 or 20 steps to solve and one cube just doesn't launch like you think it will.
Nah.
Or it doesn't land where you think it might. And so you have to start that whole puzzle factory all over again from the very beginning to get through it.
Ouch.
So it's really just my greatest complaint is just that there's no, like, and it makes sense that there's no, like, kind of checkpoint system partway through a puzzle or anything, but it's so daunting that you just want to put the controller down and be like, you know what, I'll do it later.
Fuck this.
Later. I can't repeat this cycle 3 more times until I get it in just the exact hair trigger location this time. And that's really just like the only thing I can complain about because everything else, you know, the controls for manipulating everything are really simple. It's just, you know, triggers and bumpers. It's not something you have to really think. It kind of comes with second nature. But if you just get one thing a hair off,
yeah,
it's all over.
Overall, that doesn't sound like too big of a negative in the grand scheme of things. So for $25, what's your verdict on this one?
I actually give this a buy it. Like I said, if the most thing that you can complain about is that you have to repeat a puzzle a couple times or take a break and come back and do it later after you get tired of trying to do it a couple times, that's pretty small potatoes. The story I thought was really interesting, a little predictable, you know, but not anything, you know, that was going to make you disappointed in it just because you figured out where it was going to head to.
Yeah.
But it was entirely an enjoyable experience. And
it's not about the destination. It's about the journey.
I'm sure there's a euphemism joke in there, but I'm not going to make it at this time.
Oh, man.
But I do definitely give it a buy it.
Cool. We got one final game to talk about tonight, and that is called Western Press, developed by Bandit One, published by Surprise Attack Games. It came out March 23rd on Xbox One for $7.99. Based on a true story, Western Press is the most historically accurate frontier dueling game available for Xbox One, probably. Up to 16 players or bots compete in a tournament of 1v1 sprints to press a random string of 10 buttons, the fastest. And that basically explains the game. This is competitive button pressing, the video game. Basically, there's two different modes. One is tournament mode. The other is like a single player skill test. You start off playing against a stack of cans to kind of just teach you the ropes where on the left side of the screen, you're going to see from top to bottom a bunch of different button presses, whether it's directional arrows, whether it's face buttons. Later on, as it gets more complex, they'll add triggers and bumpers to it. And you have to press those buttons in order as fast as you can. As you go through the game, the single player skill test mode, it gets harder as it goes on, obviously. I made it up to rank 8 out of 9, and I cannot beat it because I'm not that fast anymore. But yeah, the whole goal of the game is just put the numbers in faster than your opponent. If you fuck up an input, you'll get a time penalty. And then, you know, the winner wins and the loser gets shot. It's that simple.
So it's a button duel.
Yeah. Yep, 1v1. Props to them for including online play in it. That's not something that I would expect to see in this, but they have online play for up to 16 players. And even when they're 16 players, it's still just 1v1 matches. So two people will play, and then the next two people will play, and then the next two people, and you just a tournament format. And the winner at the very end wins the tournament. I don't know what else to say about the game. This is one of those games that's really, that's what it is. I think it's fun. I think it's enjoyable for $8. I think there's enough content there for it, and it's cheap enough for it. If you do not have good reflexes and you're not fast at pressing buttons, you're not going to like this game. If you have decent reflexes and you think you could push buttons faster than your friends, then pick this up and have a party and play it. If you don't have friends, then fucking play online if you want. Or do the single player stuff and see if you could beat all 9 levels, which I can't because I'm shitty and awful. And I don't know. What else do you say about this game? You press buttons as fast as you can and try not to get shot.
Is it worth it?
$8. I give it a recommended try it. It's tough to give it a full-on buy it just because, you know, people out there are not going to have great reflexes. I'm able to get through the 10 button presses in 3.5-ish seconds, and skill level 8 and higher is sub 3 seconds, and I can't do it that quick.
I wonder if input lag makes a difference.
I don't know. I don't see why it would. I don't know. I use standard wireless controllers. Raider Biz, $8 to button mash, I'll pass. It's a fairly easy achievements if you got good reflexes and you're quick at pushing buttons. If you're not good at pushing buttons, then don't get it. That's really
Raider will probably just win it in a giveaway anyway. So.
Probably. Overall though, yeah, for $8 it might even be cheap enough for a fuck it, why not? If you want to push buttons and get achievement points for pushing buttons, then fuck it. Grab it. It's only $8. Nice. And it has online play, so. But yeah, that is it for the reviews. That is it for everything. Thanks to everyone for dropping by and doing some reviews, and thanks to the power at your place for being
I'm
a
so
dick.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're just in the middle talking during the one review. It's like, yeah, and then hello. I have no idea what I'm gonna dance around and keep and edit and whatever
I'm
else.
I'm so sorry.
Hey, it's not.
And
your
then
fault.
I flounder because I am so medicated. And I just was like, all I need to do is stick to the script, and then everything just shit the bed.
Then everything got fucked up.
Because, like, the more I tried to go back to what I was saying, the more my brain's like, no, you already said that, dumbass. Oh my god.
Well, then we will wrap this up. I will let you take some more pills and then crash and into a medical coma and drool wherever. Do you have any final words to wrap this up?
No, I don't even have a chicken crumb because it's late.
Drugs, yay.